Realm of the Historics, you are welcome. And today's today. Put on your seatbelt because opinions aside, and let's talk. Today we are dealing with the facts. It is a good morning and welcome to Realm of the Historics. And today we are getting into the history, into the dramatics. And today I don't want to analyze anything that is international. I want to look into the local. I want to analyze what is local. And there is a topic that most people are afraid of, most journalists are afraid of talking about, because apparently it's a sensitive topic. And you know what? There is nothing sensitive about the topic that we are about to discuss. Now, let's look at the Zambezi.
Slow internet should be a headache of the past, yet many Namibians have connections that just aren't fast. We have a solution that might set you free. It's called Mobile LTE, and it comes with real speed. You'll enjoy up to 50 megabytes per second from just $300 a month and free internet browsing after midnight till 6. When it comes to staying connected, this is it. Visit paratus.africa/Namibia or our branches nationwide and experience the thrill of better internet with Paratus by your side. Always prepared.
Right, sorry, I thought this thing caught me, I thought I was going to talk for 2 more minutes. Kanti, the ad is very fast. It's counting very fast. Okay, so let's look at the Zambezi region. And the last week it was blessed, not with rain, but with something that is of a joke, though very serious. Okay, something that is of a joke, though very serious. A group of more than 50 people from the so-called United Democratic Party staged a demonstration, in fact, demanding the Namibian government to withdraw itself and all its ordinances from the Caprivi. And apparently, Caprivi is their country, and Muyongo must come back and be their leader. All right, so why do I say the so-called United Democratic Party? Because United Democratic Party was banned from being a political party in I think it was 2006 when it was declared illegal. So it is illegal to make a meeting under the flag of United Democratic Party. But United Democratic Party, in fact, is responsible for the 2nd of August 1999. Because it's a United Democratic Party's wing, military wing, called the Caprivi Liberation Army. But we'll deal with that in a moment, because I just want to give you an overview history of where the United Democratic Party is coming from, and in fact where the issue of where the secessionist mentality of certain groups or a certain group in Zambezi that calls itself Caprivians, where that all comes from. Because, you see, we look at this issue as very sensitive, and we don't even want to talk about it because apparently it's very sensitive. But there is nothing sensitive about the topic. In fact, there is nothing serious about the topic at hand. I don't know what the current government looks at it, how they look at it. That's of course a discussion on the government level. But I just want to give you an overview, historical overview and background of what is going on. For some of you that are AMA 2000 that don't understand what is going on. Apparently, and I'm saying apparently, because apparently there is a mega agreement or major agreement between Kaunda, who was the president of Zambia at that time, and Sam Nujoma, who was the president of SWAPO, and of course Meshack Muyongo, on behalf of Brendan Kangongolo Simbaye, who was the president of KANU. Now, KANU was formed around the 1961. That was the Caprivi National Union. Okay? And they wanted to also go and fight for the liberation, just like SWANU was. So, but the problem was, the South African government was leading Caprivi. And you see what makes it easy for people to believe that Caprivi was not part of Southwest Africa is because of the administration. Because Caprivi, till during that time of the 1960s, their administration was in Pretoria. And what brought to this was after the 1918, after Germany was defeated during the First World War, South Africa got Southwest Africa. And they got Southwest Africa to prepare Southwest Africa for self-governance. And most of us think Southwest Africa was the entire country. In fact, the Southwest Africa that we're talking about, that should be prepared by South African Union for independence, were not native people. It was not Hereros, Damaras, Namas, Oambo, Kavango, and Caprivi. Those native people were not included. The people that the people in question here were the white settlers. That South Africa should govern them for a while and prepare them for independence. These were the white settlers, not native people. They were not part of that 1915 agreement with the League of Nations. And this is what we don't know. And this is what Muyongo and others have, wisely used, to manipulate and distort history. I mean, just like any other politician. So, and most people in Zambezi would argue like this because they want to push a narrative. And in fact, then in 1929, I think around between 1915 to 1929, the Caprivi area was administered by Britain through Bechuanaland. That was, it was, in fact, from 1838, the Caprivi area was administered by the Lozis through the Kololo when they were conquered. But if you start the history from the 18th century, that's when you can push this narrative. And most of the people, whether they are those the professors who have written the history about Caprivi, they start the history of Caprivi from the 18th century. And you know why they start that? Because they want the name Caprivi. Because without the name Caprivi, they are powerless. Without the name Caprivi, they are powerless. But till 1890, the name Caprivi was not known. In fact, I think it came to be named, that name started to be very well known from 1909 with, who is this, white man, the German man. I think I'm mixing up his first name, but his last name is Streitwolf. Streitwolf. He's the one that, in fact, made that name very popular. And he's the one that even named the Luhonono village to Schuckmannsberg, after Bruno von Schuckmannsberg. Because that's where he came to base his headquarters there. So, but if you go back, and that is why, you see, when it comes to the Delimitation Commission and the people that are fighting for Bwabwata, for example, with the Mbukushus, that's why they fail. You see, you have all the professors in Zambezi that go to fight, they fight against the Delimitation Commission. And when they start the history, they start it from the 18th century. They want to put, they have this lousy narrative that Caprivi is theirs. But Caprivi doesn't belong to the Lozi tribe, because the Lozi tribe did not exist. In fact, the Luyanas never existed until the mid 17th centuries. But there were tribes that occupied Caprivi before it was even called Caprivi. It was called Itenge. And Itenge, we know what it means. And Itenge, we know what it means, because if you want to trace it from its very the root, you will be talking about the 13th century. And that time, there was nothing called Luyana Kingdom. There was nothing of that sort. So, which means Itenge existed 500 years before the first Luyana king was known in the area. And you see, when the Mbukushu king says that Kongola is theirs, and the people in the Kongola or the traditional authority around the Kongola area will fight and say, no, it is theirs. But the traditional authorities around there never existed. So, and if you talk, if you have to listen to the king, the chief of the Mbuku, of the Hambukushu, he will tell you that when they arrived in that area, whom they found in that area, they will tell you. So they will tell you whom they found, the Mbukushus will tell you whom they found in that area and whom they shared borders with. Now, because Zambezi is a tribally intoxicated area, that's one thing that you need to understand very well. That Zambezi is an area where it's tribally intoxicated. And it is very easy for you to get history distorted. Very much easy. It doesn't matter whether they are professors from the University of Namibia or professors from where. They distort history because they have a tribal narrative. But there are certain tribes that never existed. In fact, there are certain tribal chiefdomships that never existed until 1909. In fact, they came to be established by Stredvov. So now, let's get to the issue that is causing the drama. People were convinced that Caprivi is theirs, is their country.
Titanium, the perfect fit between platinum and silver, complementing our existing benefit options. We always offer a comprehensive healthcare experience. NHP, the premier member-centric medical aid fund. Visit NHP today at nhp.com.na. NHP, we're about you.
Now, the problem we have is we start the history of Caprivi with 1890. With German, you know, when the German came to ask it from the British. But without knowing that, Even Southwest Africa itself never existed until the 18th century. There was nothing called Southwest Africa. And in fact, we know that the Ovambo people were also not unitary. There was no singular Ovambo kingdom. It was kind of heterogeneous. You know? One, it is homogeneous in terms of language, but heterogeneous in terms of, you know, cultural variation and kingdoms. The Ndonga people had their own kingdom, exclusively Ndonga kingdom. The Obakwanyama had their own kingdom, exclusively Obakwanyama or Kwanyama kingdom. So there was no singular kingdom in this area. And there was no singular name to call this entire vast land. It was carved up into kingdoms. This is what people in Zambezi don't understand. And in fact, even those who are so-called learned, they don't want to admit that. Because if they admit that, they know it does not fit their narratives and in fact their agenda. There was no singular name to call this place. You had the kingdom of the Namas, led by the Nama kings. You had the kingdom of the Hereros, led by the Overherero kings. You had the kingdom of the Kavango. In fact, the Mbukushus, the Ambukushus, the Girikus, the Bakwangari had their own kingdoms, exclusively kingdoms just for the Vakwangari people. And that's it. So, now, when it comes to the 1890 issue, in fact, the Portuguese and the Portuguese also carved the land the other side. That's why Onjiva now belongs to Angola. The Makunde was the kingdom, Oihole was the kingdom palace area of the Ovakwanyama people, but Oihole is in Angola. But because of international demarcation, we have one people, you know, divided by borders. And this is one thing that the Zambezi people don't want to understand. So, let's now fast forward to a mega agreement. You see, the mega agreement, according to the Namibian newspaper of 24 January 2007, you need to go and look for that paper, where in fact it made headlines that the major agreement was found, that President Nyoma and SWAPO officials have been denying, but now the major has resurfaced, is there. And everybody ran to the newspaper and they got the newspaper, just to be surprised that there is nothing like that major agreement. In fact, most UDP, United Democratic Party, and the so-called Caprivi Consent groups, they claim that the mega agreement says they will fight together, they will unite, and after fighting together, and when Namibia attains independence, the Caprivi will be its own, you know, independent country. Apparently that is what is in the major agreement. Okay? But according to the major agreement that is here, and I want to refer you to that, there is not such a clause. In fact, all the clauses, all the 5 points that are there, are talking about Namibia as a unitary state. Namibia is one country. Not one. Don't forget that the Rehoboth also wanted to have to be its own country. I don't know how that died. So, that merger does not exist, and this is not the only claim. The people in Zambia, the Barotseland, the Western Province, also claim that there was a merger between Manawina and Kaunda in 1960. And they claim that there was a major agreement that Barotseland will be its own independent state. And historically, there is nothing like that. Not even a record in the United Nations. If you get to the United Nations, there is no such a record. So, in fact, major agreements of those two parts don't exist. So now, in the 16th centuries, starting from the 14th century, the people that have lived in that area were mostly, before the Mbukushus even arrived, they were mostly San, and a few, Subia people that were scattered around between, that area of Victoria Falls up to this area. It was mostly Subia and the Tongas that mostly occupied this place before we came to know that there is what we call Lozi or Luyana. And if you say that in Zambezi, you are already tribal. So, the whole issue of Caprivi is politically complicated. Because you have a problem where the government also doesn't want to come out publicly and argue their own side. And this is what makes it more, complicated. Because the government will rather just, watch things unfold and maybe try to extinguish the fire if they see that there's some violence here. And then they sit back. But the truth is, if we have to fight to talk about the 1964 issue. Okay, we say in 1960, around 1966, between 1961 and 1966, there was a letter written by KANU. They talk about this letter. Apparently, KANU wrote a letter to the League of Nations, or to the United Nations that time, so that they may be a separate country. And most of the people that we debate with in history, they say they wrote the letter to the United Nations to grant them independence from Southwest Africa. And I always ask them, what was the response from the United Nations? And most of them tell me there was no response. Then I said, fine. Do you know why there was no response? It's because of the 1946 or 1945, 1946 agreement, United Nations declarations, that they are going to respect internationally drawn borders. No new border should be drawn. This is what they will not tell you. And anybody that claims to be knowledgeable on the issue of Caprivi will not tell you about the United Nations response. Because they know it does not fit their narrative. So, in 1964, or 1961, around the KANU is formed, and then they go into Zambia, into exile, and then they meet with Sam Nyoma. They agree to fight together. They agree to become one party, which is SWAPO, Southwest Africa People's Organization. And it happened. Whatever happened between Sam Nyoma and Muyongo, nobody really knows. Then Muyongo starts in Lusaka that he wants to revive KANU. But Kaunda says, nope, you are not going to revive KANU here because KANU is dead according to that agreement. In fact, the Caprivi Freedom, this is an online pro-Muyongo publication, puts it to say that Muyongo defected with a large number of people. They went into Botswana and they came back into Caprivi. But that's not true. It was just around 5 people that came back with Muyongo. The rest of the people, the Caprivian people, remained in SWAPO and they continued with the struggle until 1989. Now, that is the people of the, that is the people of like, you can ask the people like Dr. Albert Kawana, you can ask Dr. Richard Kami, you can ask Honorable Alfea Sampofu, who is a governor right now. So the rest of them remained in SWAPO. So what happened was, now we have to investigate, because there was a problem. SWAPO was formed, fine, and KANU is in Caprivi. There was no historical background, historical fact and historical evidence to prove to everyone beyond reasonable doubt that SWAPO represented everyone in Namibia or in Southwest Africa. And just also as there is no historical evidence to prove beyond reasonable doubt that KANU represented everyone in Caprivi. Okay? So, now, because there was no evidence that KANU represented everyone in Caprivi, and there was no also evidence beyond reasonable doubt that SWAPO represented everyone in Southwest Africa, then this is a major problem. But this major problem was somehow solved. And the only thing that came to solve the problem was, fine, Resolution 435 is passed. Namibia is to be prepared for independence. And United Nations Transition Assistance Group is deployed from Arians Flay to Impalila to oversee a transition into elections. So, and you know what? Let me leave this point for now. Let me just go back a little bit. So in 1985, Muyongo fails to come up to revive KANU. It not only failed because Kaunda refused, he also failed to have membership, especially in Zambia. So he failed to convince a number of people to follow him. Then he comes into Botswana, comes down into Caprivi in 1985. And then he establishes the CAP. He doesn't go back to KANU. He comes into a new scheme, that is Caprivi Alliance Party. Now, the Caprivi Alliance Party fails to kick start, like the political party engine fails to start. So in fact, the Caprivi Alliance Party dies natural death, because the five people that were forming it, they dispersed, 3-2. So, and some went into other parties. And in fact, there was another problem around the 1985, which I'm going to tell you as we go. So, okay, Miongo sees that, okay, the Caprivi Alliance Party is dead. He comes up with the United Democratic Party and establishes it. And, well, he somehow gets people to follow him, and he fails to get a large number, because his aim, Miongo's aim, was to get all Caprivians to his side. Because his argument was, there is so much discrimination in SWAPO against the Caprivian people. And everybody bought into this, and decided that the Caprivian people were being tortured by SWAPO, so it becomes a Ovambo Caprivian kind of, you know, narrative, which is false, because if you look at the 1970, the dramas of the 1970s and 1980s that led to the Lubango dungeon that we talk about, the majority of the people that were said to be killed in the dungeons were Ovambo people. So that narrative, Miongo's narrative, and of course the freedom, Caprivi Freedom publication, is false based on that, because historically, when we look at the facts, and everybody that is from that era will tell you that most of the majority of the people that were tortured in the dungeons were Ovambo people. And in fact, if we look at the influential people that were in SWAPO at that time, it was made of mainly the Caprivians, and the Ovambos were the ones that were playing roles in terms of, you know, in terms of numbers. Now, Miongo comes back, forms Caprivi Alliance Party, it dies, and then he forms United Democratic Parties, and he wants to get everyone on board. He goes to the traditional authorities, they refuse to follow him. They refuse to follow him. Okay? So he tried to convince the traditional authorities in the area. He fails to get their support. And also he fails to get the entire Caprivi on his side, because there was a problem. That time, the Democratic Tonhale Alliance was just 8 years old. You know, it was formed in 1977. It was 8 years old, and it was, you know, through which the traditional authority were governing. So, it became very difficult for Miongo to operate, and in fact to have numbers, because of the prevalence of the DTA. Miongo had no match for the Democratic Tonhale Alliance when it comes to the prevalence and the numbers in the region. And also he had no match to, in fact, try to convince people against SWAPO, because of what was prevalent, you know, in the region. So Miongo had run into two major problems. But those two problems were solved when the Democratic Tonhale Alliance also ran into problems. and they needed Muyongo to be like the Messiah. So the Democratic Alliance, when 4-3, they said, look, we stand no chance against SWAPO, against SWAPO's Nyoma. Because around the 1980s, SWAPO, Nyoma, they became very, very popular. And through radio and those publications, which Muyongo and DTA didn't have. So Muyongo and DTA have run into problem. And now they need each other to solve this problem. So the DTA needed Muyongo to use him to stand head on with Nyoma, because them on their own, they stood no chance. They were going to lose, miserably. If you have to take somebody, for example, like a white person, by that time to compete with Nyoma, no one among the black community would have voted for DTA. So what solved the problem was the wise decision from DTA to say, okay, let's make this guy the president of DTA. And UDP and DTA agree for UDP to be destroyed and merge into DTA. So, and it was done. Fast forward 1989, the elections take place, and Sam Nyoma wins. Now, I go back to the first point. Because I was saying there was no evidence, historical evidence, beyond reasonable doubt that SWAPO represented everyone in Southwest Africa. And so as there was no historical evidence to prove beyond reasonable doubt that KANU represented everyone in Caprivi. So here is where SWAPO's issue or problem came to be answered, to be solved. So SWAPO wins with the overwhelming majority. They win elections. They have quite a large number of seats in parliament. And of course, DTA gets 21 seats, if I'm not mistaken. And Muyongo becomes the leader of the official opposition automatically. So, Meshack Muyongo, after becoming the leader of the official opposition, did not object to the signing of the constitution, because he's also there, that Namibia is a unitary state from Kakumba to Arianzfle. I don't know how to pronounce that word, that name very well. Please pardon me. From Kakumba to the border with South Africa. Namibia is a unitary state. And Muyongo campaigns as a candidate under DTA, campaigning for Namibia. In fact, if things could happen that the Namibia could win, I mean, DTA could have won, Muyongo could have been Namibia's first president. Where was the idea of Caprivi? Muyongo was not satisfied by being the leader of the official opposition. In fact, he wanted to become the president. And there's no way he can become the president. He can only become the president of Caprivi. So, he can only become the president of Caprivi. You know, something scary is that in 1992, we saw first local authority election, where in fact DTA wins. Like, really, DTA wins over Katima, you know? And the Katima Mlilo town council, or however it was called that time, whether it was a town or it was a village council, we don't know, falls under DTA. Then, in 1994, Muyango still stands as challenger to Nyoma. There were other political parties such as MAG, DCN, Republican parties, UDF, and so forth, SWANU and all those. But those were smaller parties, very small. Some of them did not even make it in 1989 to talk even about a seat. So Muyango, again, you know, campaigns under DTA. And if he could have won, he could have still be a president of Namibia, including Caprivi. Then he lost. And then in 1998, Muyango realized that no, chances for me to rule are very thin. So he goes, there's a man in South Africa that, you know, get in connection with him, and he tells him, look, let's revisit that issue of Caprivi. And then they go to Johannesburg. They go to Joburg in 1998 with, of course, the late Boniface Mamili. So, and it is, rumors started to resurface that Muyango is thinking about seceding. And the DTA party says, uh-oh, we are running into a problem. We are not supporting secessionists. We are not supporting secessionism. Therefore, we declare Muyango. they in fact expel Muyango out of DTA. And I think the person that takes charge of DTA is Katutile Kaura. So, UDP is formed. And in 1998, in August, and I'm telling you, I've been following this issue. So I've been following this issue. In 1998, in August, Muyango stages makes a, there was a demonstration in Katima. In fact, I was in Katima that time when the demonstration was, you know, taking place. And they wanted to revive United Democratic Party. And they were calling for the government to withdraw itself. That Caprivi must be free. It's under Namibian colony. So it's been colonized by Namibia. and then in 1999, in May 1999, the Prime Minister at that time, Hage Geingob, you know, comes to Katima. And in fact, the venue was the New Apostolic Church. You know that church? We're upstairs. So, and the Prime Minister gives a speech and he tells people not to follow what Muyongo is doing. And it was with cheers and ululation that time. So, and just 2 months after that, UDP military wing, the Caprivi Liberation Army launches a surprise attack on the military base on the 2nd of August. So there's, the first hours were very chaotic. You know, the first hours were very chaotic. The base seemed, people, the military at the base, the military personnel at the base seemed not to have known, or not to have known what to do, what was going on. So, and after a few hours, you know, and NBC in Katima is captured, like some certain, you know, key buildings are attacked, key infrastructures are attacked. Then, well, there was a command from Windhoek to say, okay, this is a revolt and we are going to crush it. So this is not, we are not going to have a table to sit on the table with Muyongo. We are going to crush the revolt. And no 2 ways about it, Caprivi is a Namibian territory. And this is treason. And Muyongo is responsible for this treason. So it's charge number one. So within few hours, you know, NBC and other buildings are liberated or recaptured. And, you know, the Caprivi Liberation Army is disbanded, completely disbanded, you know, completely annihilated, and a lot of them were captured, many of them killed. And of course, Muyongo flees to Denmark, where he is still today. So around 2012, there we start to hear the formation of the Caprivi Consent Group. And in 2018, the Caprivi Consent Group decided to do some disruption. And they are also crushed by the authorities. And unlike the Caprivi Liberation Army, they were not captured and arrested and put in prison for a long time. They were released because it was found out that some of these guys are just people from the villages. They don't really know what, they don't even know what they are doing. So, and of course, the Caprivi Consent Group is dead. So, the Caprivi issue, it's a personal issue for Muyongo and his followers. In fact, it is not a tribal issue. But you will have quite a number of people from a certain tribe that seem to be the majority in this, in the movement. And most people say it's Mafwe tribe that are behind that. And some say no, it's the Mbalangwes that are, you know, pushing this, this narrative. Whatever it is. So, you will always have a majority from a certain ethnic group that will lead a certain revolution, whether it's a revolution or a revolt. But funny enough, the traditional authority come out and say, look, we distance ourselves from any secessionism. We are a traditional authority in a unitary state called Namibia. So who are these people that are the so-called Caprivians? So who are they? And we could just limit this to the United Democratic Party movement and their followers and sympathizers. And to tell you the truth, over the years, the United Democratic Party has failed to get numbers, especially among the young people. Because number one, young people have a lot of questions that United Democratic Party people cannot answer. Number two, it seems that there are no intellectual, you know, intellectuals that are publicly coming forth to say, like maybe professors and people of law background, and maybe former ministers from Zambezi or Caprivi that are coming out publicly to say they are supporting the movement. Now, who is really fueling this power, this fire? Well, you can say it's Muyongo, but then where does Muyongo draw inspiration? Muyongo draws inspiration from the Barotse land. Because the Barotse land in Zambia have the same, there are people in Barotse land that have the same, you know, mentality. And you see, the whole Barotse land province, we can say is a province of 2 million people. Let's put it that way. 2 million people. It's a province of 2 million people, approximately. And the people who want to be free from Zambia do not even represent the majority of the people in that province. And that's where the problem is. Because when the Zambian police came, you know, there was a time when the Zambian paramilitary was sent to the area. And we always laugh at this when we talk about, you know, history. We always laugh at this. In fact, people threw away the legalia, like, literally. And they said, and we always say that, you know, and they say, look, don't even tell me, I'm not even part of Barotse land. So, that's, you know, these are just people who have no historical, have no knowledge about history. They just get manipulated into meetings and given positions and promised, you know, given position and false promises. But when they see real confrontations, they will always run away and deny allegiance to either UDP or, you know, Barotse land. And in most cases, most of these people, they always want to speak Silozi. Whether it is UDP or Barotse land. So they speak Silozi. And in fact, if you look at the demonstration, the current demonstration that just, you know, the demonstration that just finished or that just ended, and you listen to the person talking, the lady that was reading the petition, you could really tell that she doesn't have any knowledge of what she's talking about. So, I listened to a video clip where Muyongo is talking and is telling his followers to demonstrate. In fact, he's not telling his followers to fight. Because what helped Muyongo with the Kapivi Liberation Army in the 1990s, was that time there was so much chaos in Angola. So, and most of the people that trained the Kapivi Liberation Army were UNITA, you know, military personnel. So it was easy for them to get guns and get ammunition from UNITA. But this time, if UDP should reform or revive its military wing, it would be very difficult for them to get anywhere. Very much difficult, because no country in SADC would want to destabilize, you know, to participate in any destabilization of Namibia. In fact, most of the landlocked countries need Namibia for their dry ports. So no country will dare, you know, touch Namibia in that way. Because it is easy for Namibia to sanction Zambia. Very much easy. And it will be very much easy for Namibia to sanction Botswana. Very much easy. And they'll find it difficult to get cargo through Durban. So, and anybody with economic wisdom understands that very well. But during the 90s, it was very easy for the Kapivi Liberation Army to even get boosted, you know, with military advisors from UNITA and from, let's say, from Botswana. Because it was during the same period of time when Namibia and Botswana were at, you know, odds over the Kasikiri and Sidudu Islands. So it was going to be very easy for Botswana to come in softly and just say, look, we can give you this. You fight. And when you win over your Kaprivi, you give us this island of Kasikiri. Because Botswana wants Kasikiri Island because of water. Botswana doesn't have much water, you know, doesn't have water as we have. So, but the government of Botswana was very wise enough not to practically get involved, because it was going to spark a war that they were not going to, you know, to get out of. So, and because that was going to be a regional war. It was going to be a regional war, because it is easy for Namibia to say, Mugabe. It was easy for Nyoma to say, Mugabe, I am in a problem here. Or Dos Santos, I'm in problem. Or to say, you know, that was, of course, Thabo Mbeki. So with Thabo Mbeki, maybe it was going to be a bit difficult. But with Mugabe and Dos Santos, it was going to be easy for Mugabe and Dos Santos to mobilize forces in getting to Namibia and crush both Botswana and Muyongo. That was going to be very easy. And of course, South Africa would have chosen to be neutral and pursue war to end via diplomatic means. But who knows? Because, you see, that time Botswana was becoming hostile to almost everyone. So it was going to be very easy for a regional conflict that was going to see Botswana isolated and crushed. Because Botswana doesn't have practical war experience. See, the Botswana military, they don't have practical war experience. So if they could have faced off with, you know, a brigade from Angola, for example, they were not going to be much at all. But then the problem would have become, it would be very, very easy now for UNITA to unite with, you know, with rebels from Zaire and Rwanda and Uganda, you know, and create something like a formidable army too. So the whole region was going to be plunged into chaos. And South Africa was not going to be spared. So, and I think the Botswana government was wise enough not to publicly get involved. But the likelihood of them to have given Muyongo some backdoor assistance, that likelihood is very high because of what was going on between Namibia and Botswana over the Kasikili Island. And thanks to the same heads that were ruling the two countries that time, there was a diplomatic achievement, though not satisfactory to Namibia, but at least peaceful enough to have kept Namibia intact, you know, to have kept Namibia intact. So, this time, the United Democratic Party, is not able to put up a formidable, because they don't have numbers. Number one, you know, people have seen what happened on the 2nd of August, 1999. People have seen what has happened, and nobody wanted to be repeated again. And you see, and that's why fireworks are banned in Katima. Any sound of explosion, boom, boom, they are banned because of the trauma. You know, they saw it all. Like, they saw the Namibian Defense Force getting in. And they saw people dropping dead. Like, Caprivi Liberation Army were no match at all. It's not something that we are making up of being pro-Namibia or whatever. But we are saying real facts. They were crushed in fact, no mercy. And it was just maybe 3 days. In 3 days, in 72 hours, the Caprivi Liberation Army was forgotten completely. They were crushed. So, maybe the solution could be Namibian government maybe could come up with a referendum to say, fine, let's come up with a referendum, we are voting. Do you want Caprivi to get off Namibia? You want to be free. How many of you want to break free? And I'm telling you that after the referendum, many people say the referendum is a solution. But I would agree to a certain extent. But I would disagree again to another extent. My agreement to the referendum is that it will prove who is who. And that's where it ends. But my disagreement to the referendum is that even if you come up with a referendum and there is proof beyond reasonable doubt that the majority of the people are opting to stay with Namibia, this group will still continue. This group is still continuing because they do not have a vision. Okay, so after a short musical break, it's 20 minutes past the hour of 12 o'clock, and I'll be talking for almost an hour. After a short musical break, we are now going to look at the claims of discrimination that the Caprivians are discriminated by the Namibian government. That is the claim from the so-called Caprivi Freedom. And this is a pro-Miyongo online publication. Okay, so look, where opinion is needed, we need to give opinion. But where facts are needed, we need to give facts. So, and this program is not opinion-based, it's fact-based. So if you are calling in, you need to know that you have the requirements here. You come with facts, not opinion. All right. So let's go for a short musical break, and we are coming to discuss that. Is there any discrimination against people in the Zambezi area or the so-called Caprivians?
Succeed. just wake up, you will succeed. All right,
we continue. It's 29 minutes to the hour of 1 o'clock. And 1 o'clock, I get out of here. Now, is there any discrimination against anyone or as a policy of Namibia against any tribe, especially Zambezi? Or the so-called Caprivians. Because this is the narrative that they are under colonial and they are not developing because the government of Windhoek, if the government in Windhoek is not sending services to the region. Well, somebody would say, well, maybe it's true. Well, maybe to a certain extent. Okay, you can accuse me of being pro-Namibia here. But that's fine. In fact, I'm a Namibian. Now, let's look at the facts. Let's look at the practical facts that we can touch, that we can smell, that we can see. And when we look at the practical facts, facts speak otherwise. In fact, on average, the majority of the people that are ruling in government, especially the SWAPO government, you know, SWAPO government, we can say that mostly, the people that are occupying key positions in government agencies, you know, wherever you go, whether it is in law, whatever, people that are occupying high positions, there is no office in Namibia or fraternity in Namibia where you don't find somebody from Zambezi. In fact, we can even say that the Zambezi people are the second majority when we are talking about government. So the most people that are in government, we can say majority is Vambo and Zambezi. So, that is the reality we cannot run away from. And in fact, on average, you have a higher percentage compared to any other tribe, of the people occupying key positions in government offices from Zambezi. Not only government offices, but even private companies from Zambezi. So, I don't want to get into the nitty-gritties of the meritocratic orders that was followed to arrive to that. But Zambezi is not even one of the regions we can talk about when we talk about government neglect. It does not even fit that. Because you have a large number of people in Zambezi. The first person to be, you know, Okay, let me not go there. Or maybe let me go there. The first person to be the leader of official opposition, you know where the person is coming from? From Zambezi. The first person to be the second the vice president of SWAPO, is coming from where? From Caprivi. So, when we talk about discrimination, let's remove Zambezi out. Whatever is happening in Zambezi is lack of development. Is a negligence of Zambezi officials themselves. Okay? So it's a negligence from lack of competency from officials in Zambezi region themselves. It has nothing to do with any policy of government, whether it is the previous government or any other government. So, now, the group claiming to represent, or the group claiming to be Caprivians, do not even represent 1% of the population of the region. They don't even represent 0%. They are in the negative zero. And they don't even have the capacity to run their own villages. So, the people in question that are demonstrating, they don't even have the capacity to run their own villages. If you trace them one by one, there is nothing that you can find that they have achieved. On a personal level, they are not even business people. They are not in any economic activities. They are nowhere. You know, they belong to nowhere as far as society is concerned. So, and you see, maybe that's the reason why the government is quiet. Maybe that's the reason why the government is quiet, because these people don't have any influence whatsoever. And most of the time when you look at their statements and you follow them, they're even worse than people. It's like somebody was looking after cattle and is just captured to go and, you know, demonstrate and give a speech. See, that's how totally chaotic or totally disorganized the United Democratic Party is. And you see, luckily, Muyongo is not calling for, you know, for a confrontation. Because he has seen the consequences of the first attempt. So I don't think he's in any capacity right now to mobilize any liberation movement or so-called liberation movement. And like I said, they will find it hard to get support. Now, look at it this way. You see, the people in Barotseland are more than the United Democratic Party people, and I mean Muyongo's people. Up to now, they could not even put up a resistance. At least Muyongo tried. But the people in Barotseland saw it. You see, they saw. And in fact, the people in Barotseland were hoping that Muyongo will win and so that they can also draw an example from him. They saw it. They saw how much chaotic the Caprivi Liberation Army was face to face with the Namibian Defense Force. I mean, you are face to face with a formidable military organization of a state. You see where a country can say China or Russia or give us, give us armored personnel carriers there. Or give us helicopters, we will pay. You know, it's just a matter of giving Russia one mine. And you want to face off with such a formidable organization, and you not be thrown into chaos. It was insane. It was a political insanity. In fact, it was a military suicide. Because in that case, the commander-in-chief becomes a real commander-in-chief. No time. There will be no time for sitting. You see, if you do insurrection, for example, what Prigozhin did, I think it was last year. Was it last year or 2023? Somewhere there. So what Prigozhin did was mutiny. It was treason. And where is Prigozhin today? In the bosom of his ancestors. Because no government in the world, no matter how soft that government is, no government in the world will tolerate mutiny and all its manifestation. And in fact, no citizen of a sovereign country should even think of that or think of supporting that in the name of human rights. So no country in the world, no government in the world will put up with mutiny or treason and all its manifestation. So the 2nd of August 1999 was military insanity. In fact, it was a military coup, it was a military suicide. Those guys committed suicide. So it was an insane attempt. So the people in Barossaland in Zambia were watching this. And their leader was there, was watching that. Their hope was, well, Muyongo must win so that he will help us to get our own. We also want our own republic. So, and they saw how the Caprivi Liberation Army was thrown into chaos. Like I said, you are facing off with a formidable, like you are coming to fight somebody that has a house. You know? You have no house. And you are coming to fight with somebody with a house who can call neighbors to help him. This person has a lot in common with his neighbors. This person can call neighbors to come and help you. So you are nobody. You'll be no match. The neighborhood can easily be mobilized against you. So, if Wes have come to Wes, you know, the Windu could just call Harare to say, look, I've run into a problem. What do you have there? and, you know, Harare, Luanda, because you are fighting Windhoek. So Windhoek can call Harare, can call Luanda. And immediately, support comes, reinforcement comes. And you will call who? You will call no one. You are on your own. And you will be crushed formidably. So, and in 2018, the Caprivi Consent Group threatened that they were going to, you know, they were going to put up something. They were going to show, you know, they were going to show the police that, you know. So few men, few, you know, people went to the open market and they tried to do, you know, and, you know, the special field force, the one you call the reserve, just showed up. And it was just a 2-minute operation. See, it was just a 2-minute operation. And that's it. Gone. Never to try that again. They never tried that again, you see. So, and they said, we are going to make sure that the Sevilla King Festival will not take place. We'll mess it all up. We are going to smash it up. And the police said, look, we are waiting for you. We are waiting for you. So, and don't forget that, you see, the Inspector General at that time was Mr. Sebastian Daitunga. And there was a time he was addressing the police and said, look, our policy is not to face off with anyone. But if anybody decides to face off with the police officials, show them that you are better. So that's how dangerous dealing with the state. The state is powerful because it has systems in place. It has orders, it has principles, it has ethics and systems in place that are very strong that you can't annihilate, let alone want to break free, lose from. Now, none of these people, if you engage with some of these guys that are pro Caprivi freedom, and you engage them one on one, there is, you see, maybe before we go there, when we established when we introduced the Silozi segment in 2023, when we were contemplating about, when we were contemplating of coming up with a show, you see, one of the issues was to avoid the issue of Caprivi on air as much as possible. That was the issue. And I made it a mandate. But then what I went to think one day to say, no, but this issue is not a sensitive issue. Because unless the person on air doesn't have historical facts, that's when the problem becomes complicated, or the conversation will spill out of hand. So, and the people started calling on air, you know, from the so-called United Democratic Party and so-called Caprivi Freedom. They started calling on air. And you see, that topic, there is no radio station in Namibia that has discussed it extensively, like in vernacular language, for that matter, like what Eagle FM has done. And the issue was to allow as many of them as possible to come in. And they came in and they were talking. And they realized there were no match with facts on the ground. They themselves started to realize that the ground was not fertile for them. Because they thought that they now got the freedom that NBC doesn't give them. So now they come and they talk. And they found out that they needed to have facts, historical facts, which they didn't have. Because if you are talking about the history of Caprivi and you are starting it from 18th century, you already have a problem. Because when we talk about the history of Caprivi and what it was called before, we go 500 years before 18th century. And most of these guys don't have that fact. They don't have those historical facts. And in fact, some professors even call and say, there was a country called Zambezia. And then I asked him a question to say, who was the king of that Zambezia? Because we have all the succession orders of all kings that ruled, whether they are Subia or Mafwe kings. We have the succession order. In fact, the Suvia kingdom starts dating from 1300, before both Mafwe and Lozi kingdoms. So who was the king of Zambezia? And who were the subjects of Zambezia? Who was the first king of Zambezia? Could not answer the question. And you see, now, if you come on Silozi Radio, a program on Eagle FM, you talk about Caprivi, nobody will even call back and say anything. Because, we managed to crush every theory. Nobody calls in. Even if you deliberately bring it up, no one will call back and talk about it. See, that's how seriously we have debunked all false theories. So now, even if you ask these guys, what is your economic vision for your so-called Caprivi? What economic vision do you have? They will not answer you. No one will put up their hands and talk. They just want to be free. So which means this is a group of people that I can say innocently got into issues they don't understand. It's just a mere political, drama. Okay? It's just a mere political drama, just as the political drama that is in Barotseland. Unlike in Namibia where it's really democracy. In Zambia, the paramilitary went there and said, who is a Barotseland national here? Who is not Zambian here? So, no one could raise their hand to say, I'm a Brazilian. I'm not Zambian. Because they know what will happen. So, if you go into Katima now and people start to do, you know, and like what the CCG did, the police just went there and just one boom, the whole group dispersed, 180. So this is just drama. In fact, nobody could ever try to again put up a so-called, military action. And nobody has an economic vision for the so-called Caprivi. And in fact, they don't have a representation and support. Because if you want to get Caprivi out, you need to get all the traditional authority people and all the learned and intellectual people of the region and all the professors and all the minister, the former minister, people that have volume. They're the one that could pressure the Windhoek to say, okay, let's come up with a referendum. But none of those people are interested in that. Practically. So this leaves us with a question. Where is the UDP going? That's a question that leaves everyone. Well, all we need is just to get our popcorns and sit down and watch the drama. Of our program, that has been the realm of the historics today. Our aim is to analyze and make the meaning of what is happening locally, continentally, and intercontinentally without fear or favor. Right. So, till we meet again, I want to wish you a great week ahead. Please be productive. Be productive. When you hear the sound, it means we are signing up. We have landed. And of course, the people from my colleagues in the north, they are going to take you through Omaeli, one of the most powerful Oshiwambo programs that we have here. Stay tuned. This has been France, the only reliable kinetic energy in town.